Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Steve Boynt is a poet. He's an artist. He's a publisher, a philosopher, a teacher. His new book is called Always Passing Through, and he's with me here at the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Steve, welcome.
Thank you.
All right. This new book, it's lovely. Illustrations and poetry. Tell me how those two came together for you and sort of how you organized it.
Well, I've been writing poetry for a lot of years. Seems like just recently to me, but I know it's a lot of years. It just happened probably starting in about 1995, 96. And so by now I've got thousands of poems that I can pick from. And the artwork, well, I wasn't that good an artist when I was in high school. And in college, I did a little bit of sculpture. And probably the best thing that happened there was we had to do a self-portrait. And I had twisted the portrait was out of clay. And I had twisted the face around. And I had my mouth open like I was shouting, trying to put some expression into it. And it was sitting on it was drying out, sitting on a stand by the corner of a room. And came in the morning, and there was a broom handle mark. I mean, just a big dent across the face from a broom handle. And it was on the floor. So I assume it was good enough to scare the janitor. But
did you leave it like that then? Or did you try to mend it?
Well, to mend it, it was half dry, so I couldn't really do a lot. What I did was I molded a noose for around the neck, and that didn't sit well with the professor. And he always kind of made fun of me. He didn't really like me as a person. Now he and I are close friends because my wife happened to be one of his favorite students because she's a tremendously gifted artist, which leads to how I got into doing woodcuts and the type of artwork you see in the book. My wife in the past spent a lot of time in her studio doing art. Now she does everything plein air out in the car. That probably because I came down to the studio and started working with her. I don't know. But I wanted to spend more time with her. I mean, I married her because I find her fun to be with. And so when things got rough at work and just stressful, rough, I started carving. And I would sit down there and sand and carve while she would be working on her pastels. And then I kept getting older, and my hands got more and more arthritic, and I can't carve a great, smooth, nice sculpture anymore. So I started carving woodcuts, which are still carving the picture in wood, and then rubbing ink on the wood, putting paper down on the wood with ink on it, pulling the paper up, and you got the picture transferred to the paper. And I started doing those because I was still carving. And it still made sense. So I'd had my sculptures in galleries, so I started putting I went to see if I could get my lino cuts and wood cuts in galleries, and they were there. But I've got a bunch of them that I've never shown because it takes actual time and commitment to frame something, to mat and frame it. I preferred to just do the artwork and then set the thing aside. And I've got a show coming up at East Bank Art Gallery in Sioux Falls on September 1st. And it's of my lino cuts and wood cuts, and I just decided, you know, it'd be really nice to have a book that explained the process and also showed the artwork, and it just seemed natural to pair my poems I had written before with the artwork. So the art and the poems weren't done for each other. They were done separately, but they express the way I think, the way I feel, who I am. And so I paired them together based on how they felt.
Right.
You know, so I felt that I feel the pictures go with the poems, but neither one was done to illustrate the other.
Tell me a little bit more about this notion of doing the work and setting it aside. Is that you're also a teacher, you teach chemistry. Is that just the you know, you're busy and you have lots of things going on, or is there some sort of artistic process that makes it difficult for an artist to sort of overcome, you know, that moment where it's time to show it to the rest of the world?
Years ago, boy, I mean, years ago, back in the late 80s, I was a pastor. And to get into that, you had to take a personality test. They didn't tell you that you had to take one and pass it until after you finished grad school. And I was just lucky I passed the personality test, just barely. It was the Minnesota multiphasal. And I came out very introverted, but just barely enough to be able, of extroversion, to be able to function in a job with people. Over the years, the extroversion part has gotten larger and larger. So I don't really I'm not afraid to show my artwork to people. What it is for me is I hate drudgery. And matting and framing is drudgery. And, you know, when I do, we've got a house that was, it's not a fancy house. It's an old beat-up farmhouse, but it was built before South Dakota was a state. And I've done a lot of woodworking in there, and my motto is measure twice, cut thrice. Because something with, you know, I teach people how to measure in my classes. But when I do it incorrectly. And so I'll measure, get everything cut, for, and then it won't fit in the frame, the mat won't fit, or the window will be too big for the print. Or even though my wife built all these jigs and stuff, she has no trouble using them to cut a mat with a bevel on it and make it real nice. Mine always bow out, the lines I'm cutting and that. So it's a frustrating process for me.
Right. Will you read something for us from the book today? Do you have... I'll give you a minute to sort of flip through my guest, Steve Boynt. The book is called Always Passing Through, and there's an exhibition reception, artist reception, Friday, September 1st at East Bank Art Gallery in Sioux Falls. The block prints are up at East Bank in September. Something to share from the book?
Sure. I mean, I could pick just about anything. How about if I read two? Because I don't want to give a feeling of, you know, it's all one way or another. The poems are all over the place a little bit in what their topic is. Tempus Aeolus. Something about the wind gnawing stone and water, hill and plain, fur and bone. I cannot nail it. These hammering words at once too frail and too substantial. But it quells something inside. Returning this frenzied husk to something cold and hollow, resigned and calm, like a stone shattered and worn to grit. But they're not all dark like that. I don't consider that dark, but I know my mom, I had written, last year I put out a poetry book of Christmas poems, and my mom told me later it took her a couple weeks to read through it. It's a small book. Couple weeks to read through because it was so dark, and I thought they were happy poems. So yeah. This one's called The Right Idea. A quiet bar where beer is served in dusty cans, coldish. Outside, July's exhale desiccates flat land, windows whistle, walls groan, corrugated tin roofing rattles. The barman clips his nails with a jackknife. A wrinkled couple play solitaire together. A confused tumbleweed slaps into the door, then moves on.
As we look at your About the Author page, and thank you for sharing that with us as well, you've got quite a background of different jobs, different experiences, different ways to sort of engage with life that show courage and curiosity. How much does that sort of feed into your work as a poet? Is that all, you know, sort of integrated and woven together?
Yeah, it's... I was a philosophy major the first time I went to college. And I don't want people to think I flunked out. I got the degree, but I went back later for another degree in chemistry. I was a philosophy major, and a lot of the other philosophy majors and professors were historians of philosophy. They could keep everybody straight. You know, what did Thomas Aquinas say? What did Marcus Aurelius say? And that, and I could never keep them straight easily. I found that what I did, I read philosophy to find truth that I could understand. And then I just synthesized it or integrated it into me. So I don't have, you know, everything that's ever I'm just a synthesizer, so to speak. I take life and mold it into who I am and into my search to understand and find meaning in this existence. And so, yeah, everything I've done has helped shape who I am. And I know I can never recapture that. I can't keep the parts separate. I'm even worse at that than other people. So probably my memories of the past are not very accurate. They look back through the eyes of who I am now, and I can't separate out any previous way of thinking or previous existence. I mean, sometimes things just happen, but then they form a story that doesn't add any meaning to your life. Like I rode my motorcycle through a tornado. It was by accident completely. And it was a night tornado, and I wouldn't have known it was there, but it blew the car in front of me off the road. So I didn't hit the dead high wind spot, but I was a second away from that. And then when I pulled in to a bar to report that car went into the ditch, there was a bar further on the road. The people came out, grabbed me and dragged me in and tried to get me to crawl under a table because there was a tornado coming. And I said, it went by. You know, but that has had, you know, that was fun. It kind of makes me excited to remember something like that, but I don't know, that adds meaning to my life. So there's a few of those kind of things too.
Do we need poets and philosophers now more than ever? Or is our need sort of fading away in contemporary times?
It would depend on who you ask what your answer would be to that.
I'm asking you.
Yeah. And my, yeah, I would say it's what, to me, one of the scariest things about the current trends in education, both at the college level and at the secondary level. This standardizing of everything that's taught and a focus on career, you know, get your... You know, nowadays you can go and get your general classes, your courses that are generally required for a liberal arts degree or something. You can get those generals out of the way while you're in high school. Mm-hmm. And there's a limit to what high school teachers can teach about thinking in new ways because the kids are minors. And at that point, their parents are, and I agree, their parents have the say in what the kid's exposed to. That's the way it should be. But by moving those generals down to there, kids never get exposed to a lot of the questioning and a lot of the struggles that have made our civilization what it is. And it's more like get those out of the way and then get your technical courses in that get you your degree that's useful, that will make you money, as if money was good on its own. It's just a goal towards, it's something to be used to make you happier or make you a better person, and it shouldn't destroy your education because that's supposed to do the same thing. I believe education's to make you a better person, a more knowledgeable person. And so we've had this move towards technicality in our, or a technical career, technical, you know, get out and be a marketer, be an accountant, be a chemist. Don't sit around and think deep thoughts. And there's a general move now that people aren't going to be exposed between never hearing about, like, Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals of Pragmatic Primer. They're never exposed to things like that in high school, and they shouldn't be. But they're never going to look it up on their own because they aren't exposed to it in college anymore either. The good students are getting all the generals where they might learn about things like that out of the way. And the problem is civilizations change. And the situations change, and you know, it doesn't matter who our president is. They can't control everything. It's our country, our civilization that extends through Europe and much of the world now, Western civilization, is just too complex and too big and changing in ways nobody can predict, and you have to respond to that. And given the, there's a lot of crises like the cost of medical care and that that look like they're going to push us beyond capitalism. I think we've seen that socialism and communism are no answers, but we don't have any other candidates out there. We need philosophers who can lay the groundwork so we can see in a new way, because our civilization has to adapt as it's forced to change just by the changing circumstances we find ourselves in. Global warming is going to be a big issue changing our civilization. And if we've gutted the philosophers, we've got nobody to lead the way into the new, into survival for our civilization. Technocrats can't do it. We need somebody who's going to look deeper and in a different way. Poets can pave the way for that, popularize that, but it's the philosophers who do the heavy work of thinking.
What's the role of poetry then in bringing that kind of truth and thought?
The role of poetry is to make, you know, I mean, you pick up a philosopher's book and read it. It's good bedtime reading because you'll fall asleep in the first 5 minutes. And it's hard going. And most people aren't going to read that, where they don't have the background and they don't have the interest. But poetry, a poet can take that way of looking at the world and apply it to everyday situations, bring up the new questions, the new ways of relating to the universe around us in a way that's palatable to people and start to get the general concepts across. Start to get people to move beyond where they're at to actually thinking about the coming changes in civilization.
Can anyone be a poet?
You know, that's an interesting question. I would say my answer to that would be my wife, Kathleen Benberg, and I lived down in Oklahoma for a while working with the Native Americans. The Apaches and Comanches, the Chiricahua Apaches, Geronimo's tribe, got to meet people who knew Geronimo. They were little kids when he was an old man, but it was still amazing to hear their stories, what they did remember. And what surprised me about the Comanches and Apaches was that everybody was an artist. They all did art. Some were better than others, and some were more marketable than others. Better is not always the same as marketable. But everybody tried, and everybody produced interesting, good stuff that they could share with each other, and then it gave them a greater appreciation for those who were really, really gifted at art. And I think poetry is the same way. Everybody can do poetry. It's just some people are going to write marketable poetry. Some people are going to write poetry that really flows and captures the imagination. Some people are going to write dry poetry. Some are going to write boring poetry. But they can all write poetry.
The book is called Always Passing Through. We've been talking with Steve Boynt. You can meet the poet at an artist reception on Friday, September 1st at East Bank Art Gallery in Sioux Falls. An exhibition of his block prints shows at East Bank. For how long will that be up? Do you know?
1 month. It goes a little bit into October.
And where can you get the book at then?
Right now, you can't get the book unless you find me. I'm in a lot of coffee shops and I'm wearing tie-dye usually.
Okay.
The fat guy with a beard and tie-dye. You know.
Put a picture up on our website. Find this man and you can get the book.
The reason is this book is the is meant to go with the show. So it's debuting September 1st at the opening. Right. And I'll read from it. And then it'll be available in Zanbro's and once in a while at Kaladi's. And a few other places in town. It's right now it is available on Amazon.
All right. Steve, come back and talk to us again. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.